Chamber. So Bed Bath & Beyond has been in the news a lot recently with their recent filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. But did you see that they also filed a complaint at the Federal Maritime Commission for $31.6 million? Let's break down what they say in the complaint. Hi, welcome to By Land and By Sea, an attorney breaking down the week in supply chain, presented by the Maritime Professor, me. I'm Lauren Began, founder of the Maritime Professor and Squall Strategies. And I'm your favorite maritime attorney. Join me every week as we walk through both ocean transport and surface transport topics in the wild world of supply chain. As always, the guidance here is general and for educational purposes only. It should not be construed to be legal advice, and there is no attorney-client privilege created by this video. If you need an attorney, contact an attorney. But before we get into the discussion of the day, let's go through my top three stories of the week. All right, story number one. Hapag-Lloyd, one of the ocean carriers, reported their earnings for first quarter of 2023, and they're actually better than expected for the first quarter. So FreightWaves was reporting that despite these subdued volumes and inventory corrections, that Hapag-Lloyd was saying that they were having unexpectedly good quarter one, which is kind of in line with what other ocean carriers have been saying. But one thing that Hapag's CEO, Rolf Habben Jansen, cautioned is that operating costs have increased as compared to pre-pandemic levels, meaning it costs the carriers more for the same route they were taking pre-pandemic. What he said was, and I quote, "The reality today is that everybody faces costs that are 25 to 30% higher," end quote. So ultimately, he's saying that, start quote, "your long-term outlook on rates should be that they will remain 25 to 30% above what we saw in 2018-19, simply because if they don't, we would end up with a lot of cash negative shipments and with 65% of the cost being variable, we would have to take action to mitigate costs." So he's saying everybody should be kind of expecting a 25 to 30% increase in freight rate costs over what we saw in 2018-2019. And remember, in 2018-2019, we were kind of looking at the like $1,500 range for, remember, and then that it exploded to $20,000 per shipment of Asia to West Coast. And these are generally speaking. But so what he's saying basically, and what I've kind of heard across the board, is that everything's a little bit more expensive now. So at least in part, these increased costs are, you know, partly due to these newer ship builds coming online. And remember, when we talk about the new ship builds, everyone's saying, oh, but there's going to be so much capacity. They're also going to be retiring some of the older ships, right? So we'll be having the new ships coming online, but some of the oldest ships are also going offline. But we also have increased environmental requirements on these vessels that are sailing. And so, you know, supply chain is often called an ecosystem. We often talk about that here. And it really is. So every little change can have an impact on the overall cost of shipping goods. That's why it really is so important to scrutinize anything that may affect the free flow of goods, right? And so part of that is if it costs more, whether it be vessel, whether it be environmental, whether it be fuel, it's going to be increasing the cost ultimately that's going to flow down to the consumer. So we've seen that certainly in the limelight the past few years. But it was just interesting reading the report out of Hapag-Lloyd there that he's saying 25 to 30% higher operating costs of what we saw in 2018-2019 for rates. I'm reading into that saying I think the operating costs are going to be more. He's saying 25 to 30%. So we'll see. We'll see what it looks like. All right. Story number two. I've been talking about this for a few weeks. The National Shipper Advisory Committee of the Federal Maritime Commission. Remember, this is a federal advisory committee that reports back to or kind of assists and augments industry dialogue between the industry, obviously, and the Federal Maritime Commission. They met this week on May 11th at the Federal Maritime Commission headquarters, and actually the recording is available on the FMC's YouTube channel. It's about an hour long. Like I said, this is a federal advisory committee, and it's designed to be a direct connection between the industry as a whole and the federal agency that it's advising. So this is the National Shipper Advisory Committee. So appropriately so, it's made up of a bunch of shippers. This is nice because it engages the dialogue between the advisory committee and the federal agency without having to be predicated on a rulemaking or some sort of prompt from the agency. It kind of just creates this open dialogue. Many, many agencies have it. This is a newer thing for the Federal Maritime Commission. There's been some talk of a National Seaport Advisory Committee that has not been created yet. So currently this is the National Shipper Advisory Committee. So they actually presented two draft recommendations at this meeting. One was on data and visibility, which is kind of the topic of the day, right? So what they said in this draft recommendation is that they'd like to reduce data complexity and opacity within the supply chain by requiring consistent data points, processes, and practices between ocean carriers and marine terminal operators. And these are kind of, you know, intentional, setting them out into the universe. And again, these are from the shippers. They're saying that the purpose of this would be consistency and alignment of data between ocean carriers and MTOs, especially as it pertains to milestones on the pickup and return of containers, both loaded and empty. And recall, the Maritime Transportation Data Initiative that Commissioner Carl Bensel released just, 2 weeks ago, had some reference to the National Shipper Advisory Committee's list of requests for data points. So certainly this advisory committee is something to watch. I love the fact that there is one standing up now for the Federal Maritime Commission, and they've had some pretty good recommendations coming out. The second recommendation, or draft recommendation, I should say, that they proposed was in response to the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking Detention Demurrage Billing Practices. So we've all been waiting for the D&D billing practices rulemaking, and I'm expecting a final rule to be the next step that comes out of here. So we had 180 comments filed in the fall. I believe it closed up early mid-December. And so we've been waiting for the FMC to kind of sort through all those comments, put them all together. They're going to have to address them probably in buckets as they address them in the final rulemaking. But what we're going to see is that final rulemaking, hopefully in the next month, because technically it's due to be finished by June 16th, 1 year post OSRA 22 signing, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act signing. So the National Shipper Advisory is getting in on it too, right? So the FMC, so the Shipping Advisory Committee said that the FMC responded to the Shipping Advisory Committee's recommendations from last year. And the FMC basically said, so those recommendations at the time were kind of talking about through transportation and asking the commission what they thought about the through transportation and jurisdiction of the FMC. So the FMC said they responded to the Shipper Advisory Committee prior recommendation saying the commission has direct jurisdiction over common carriers, yep, marine terminal operators, yep, and ocean transportation intermediaries, yep. All right, we know that. Then it continues and says this includes jurisdiction over through transportation. And this is the piece, we talked about it last week, that a whole bunch of people were signing onto a letter basically saying they wanted more clarity over that through transportation. The jurisdictional clarity that's actually in the Shipping Act isn't super clear, or it can be a little uncomfortable in that it doesn't directly hit it, right? So that's what I think the industry is starting to say is like, we just want more clarity here. We want this to be so crystal clear that nobody has a thought in their mind. And really what they're hinging on is, what about the railroad terminal operators? What about detention or demurrage or per diem or whatever you call it, those storage charges that happen in the rail yards? It feels like not FMC. The FMC says, yeah, but through transportation, meaning, and this is part of what they responded with, they said they responded with an example, an ocean carrier that provides a shipper with a through transportation rate from Asia to an inland destination in the United States will be subject to commission jurisdiction for the entire through transportation. So railroad terminal, and that was the end of the quote, railroad terminal operators act as agents for, emphasizing on behalf of, the ocean carriers who resell their services to provide transportation to an inland destination in the United States on through bills of lading, is what the recommendation kind of interprets that to mean. So basically they're saying, the FMC is saying, yep, if it's through transportation, then railroad congestion, railroad charges, railroad detention, demurrage, per diem counts as part of the jurisdiction of the FMC. You can see how this is a little confusing, though, right? Because you're thinking, okay, well, if you have to explain it so much, then it feels like it's probably not clear in statutory sense, right? In the actual authorizing law that Congress gave the FMC. So what the National Shipper Advisory Committee here is saying is that they actually recommend a final rule, the final rule for detention and demurrage, should expand the definition of detention and demurrage to mean, and this is what the proposed text basically said last fall and winter, any charges, including per diem charges assessed by, on, or behalf of ocean common carriers, marine terminal operators, or non-vessel operating common carriers related to the use of, and they want to eliminate the marine terminal space. They just want to say terminal space or shipping containers, but not including freight charges. They recommend text changes of the insertion of or on behalf of and striking the word marine. So basically what they're saying is they're making it a little bit more narrowly tailored so that it's, and remember, this is the regulation. So the statute, the law is given by Congress. The regulation is the interpretation. This is part of the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR, that the FMC creates. And so when any federal agency is creating rulemakings, they're creating a reg, a CFR. The Congress is the one that does the USC, the US code. It gets a little confusing here, right? But basically, the FMC is saying, we believe we have this authority for through bills of lading. And the recommendation here is basically just saying, if you do believe that, then just make your language match that. They're saying assessed by or on behalf of ocean common carriers. So they're kind of saying, okay, a nod to rail. And then they want to say related to the use of marine terminal space. Well, they're saying, well, what about the rail yard? So they want to eliminate that marine terminal space to just say use of terminal space. In other words, for example, land. It's an interesting conversation, right? Isn't this so interesting and kind of wonderful that the National Shipper Advisory Committee can have these conversations pretty directly, right? I mean, so it's a big collection of shippers, and I think that's a pretty interesting recommendation. And for the most part, the FMC has been responding to their recommendations, and this was just a draft recommendation. But for the most part, any recommendations that the group has actually fully agreed on and put forward, the FMC has responded to. So we might get clarity on this before we actually get the final rule. And perhaps the FMC says, wait and see, watch what we say in our final rule. But this brings attention to something that I think the industry, it feels like there's a shift right now happening where the industry really is looking for more clarity on the rail side of it. Does the FMC or doesn't the FMC have authority there? The FMC is clearly saying they think they do for through bills of lading, but it just isn't quite as clear in the law. All right, story number three. This one's kind of fun. So being from Michigan, I thought that I had heard all the stories of the Edmund Fitzgerald, right? I don't know if you've ever heard. Gordon Lightfoot had a song called the Edmund Fitzgerald. It went down in Lake Superior, which is one of the Great Lakes of the Great Lakes region. And you know what? I learned something from a FreightWaves article today. So a great recount of a terrible tragedy was eternalized, I would say, by Gordon Lightfoot's tribute song. And you know what? In the article, she talks about there were two vessels that were traversing at the same time. They were kind of piggybacking off each other. They had all just picked up, I think it was a steel load off of Wisconsin. And so the captains were talking back and forth to each other. And it's a really interesting account in this article talking about what was happening and how sometimes the waves were so high that they actually, the radio communication between the vessels was getting a little bit muffled. And something that I already knew, obviously, was that the captain never sent out a mayday, a distress signal, or perhaps it wasn't received because of the waves, but which suggests that it happened so quickly, that vessel went down so fast, and all lives were lost on the Edmund Fitzgerald. So really, we don't know entirely what happened there. But it's just a really interesting account. The whole story is very fascinating. This article does a great job of illuminating some areas that I think are less covered in normal times. But basically, she was looking at the song and trying to decide, does the song do it justice? Is it an accurate account? And sure enough, she thinks yes. And it's funny. She also mentions that the song is almost an anthem in the Midwest. Completely agree. Growing up in northern Michigan, completely agree. This is certainly in the anthem of the Midwest or an anthem of the Midwest, and a cautionary tale and a very, very sad story. So if you don't know the Edmund Fitzgerald story, please go look it up. It happened in November. the song by Gordon Lightfoot is just a great recount of really what happened and how sad it was. All right, well, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the day. So today we're going to be quickly talking about Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't want to go too far into this because all that's really happened so far is it is a complaint filed with the FMC. So it's one-sided still, certainly. And this is what Bed Bath & Beyond, but it's notable because they just filed for Chapter 11, and now they're claiming $31.6 million. Maybe it would have made a difference to their overall business. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they have much larger business than that, but the lost business, all of the attributing effects that they're maybe not capturing in this damages listing, perhaps was part of it, right? It was very difficult for a lot of companies to survive because if you didn't have reliable goods coming in and at the cost that you were expecting or you know, the margins probably were just slimming up, and perhaps Bed Bath & Beyond ran their operations with fairly slim margins anyways. I don't know. I have not dove into the actual business of Bed Bath & Beyond, but it's notable, right? They're a major company. So Bed Bath & Beyond is filing against OOCL, so that's Orient Overseas Container Line. So they are an ocean carrier. They're a member of Ocean Alliance, but they're also a controlled carrier of the People's Republic of China. And so what that means, the FMC keeps a list of those carriers, these controlled carriers that are majority owned or controlled by a foreign government. They keep this list basically just to kind of keep an eye on them. The ocean carriers that are on this list are not allowed to drop their rates on less than 30 days notice. So they can't really, the idea is they can't really unreasonably manipulate the market because they otherwise have a source of backed funding that other privately held carriers wouldn't have access to, right? So a government budget. That's kind of the idea here. And so just interesting to note, it doesn't change a whole lot saying that they're a controlled carrier, but that's what they are. So the allegations, Bed Bath & Beyond basically is alleging three different things. Essentially, first of all, they're saying that the respondent, so OOCL, has engaged in a practice of failing to meet its service commitments to Bed Bath & Beyond. And so this goes to the service contract piece. We've seen this previously with the MCS case, where we were waiting. I did a whole By Land and By Sea episode on the MCS case, which really was looking at minimum quantity commitments. And so that was one of the earliest shipper complaint filings about service contracts and failure to meet minimum quantity commitments, which is usually one of the terms in a service contract. So unfortunately, MCS is kind of getting hung up in a little legal procedural. So the significance of determining MQCs and the service contract terms is getting a little bit hung up. So where everybody was waiting on that case, I wouldn't rely on it because even though it was decided in favor of MCS, it is also on appeal right now. And so it's not a final decision. It's still very much in legal procedure. The content of the argument hasn't quite been dissected yet. So I very, very much, like I said, not legal advice, but very, very much caution you on relying too heavily on that. So now we have Bed Bath & Beyond kind of going for the same thing. We've been waiting to see what was happening with MCS. That was the industry was kind of waiting to see what happens there. Instead of breach of contract, they're going after the terms of commitment in the service contracts. That's what Bed Bath & Beyond is doing here. So they said they entered into service contract with OOCL for the 2020 and 2021 shipping years that specified minimum quantity commitments, the MQCs, to provide vessel space sufficient to carry those MQCs. And they're saying this is a one-sided complaint allegation. So instead of abiding by its service commitments, they said OOCL engaged in a practice of systematically failing to meet its service commitments to Bed Bath & Beyond and allowing Bed Bath & Beyond's bargain for space to other shippers to maximize OOCL's own profits. And they go into detail in the complaint where they talk about, they were really kind of looking for, they were alleging that OOCL was taking advantage of the high freight rates that were happening at the time. So in turn, Bed Bath & Beyond was forced to obtain, allegedly in their complaint, forced to obtain space on the spot market at enormous expense during a period of unprecedented high spot prices. And I think that a lot of shippers can relate to that. And that kind of gets to the crux of the problems that were happening in 2020 and 2021. What I'm really interested to see is I really want this case to be determined on the merits, on the actual arguments, because I'd like to know, well, who's right? Can you force somebody to the spot market because are the terms not specific enough? And we'll get into that in a second. Or should they honor those rates no matter what? This is an agreement. So what happened in these service contracts that they're talking about? So in 2020, the minimum quantity commitment that was determined for this service contract was 2,100 40-foot equivalent units, so boxes. So there's kind of two, in general, there's two main boxes. There's 40-foot equivalent units and there's 20-foot equivalent units. So we talk about them in FEUs, 40, or TEUs, 20. So this one had minimum quantity commitments at 2,100 FEUs annually. Now that was slated for annually, which is an average of 175 FEUs per month, but it's not rated per month. It's rated annually. That's the agreement. That's the typical thing. Ultimately, only 1,400 essentially FEUs were provided. So that left them with just over 600 FEU shortfall that was actually originally part of the negotiation. So they're saying of that 2,100 that they had agreed on, only 1,400 actually were fulfilled. And so now there's a 624, 0.15, because it kind of works out, shortfall. And so they're saying, look, you didn't hold up your side of the agreement. We said 2,100 and you didn't service 2,100. Then again, in 2021, same thing happened. But as expected, they were probably negotiating 2021 in the middle of or maybe even earlier than 2020. So the minimum quantity commitment was up. It was 3,796 FEUs, 40-foot equivalent units, annually, which created an average of 316.33 FEUs per month. Again, these terms were on an annual basis, but I'm providing the per month, and this is what the complaint also had. Actually, on 2021 service year, it was 2,400 that were actually provided. So we were looking at almost 1,300 FEUs shortfall there. So that was the first agreement or first allegation that Bed Bath & Beyond is putting up here. The second allegation is they're saying that detention demurrage was assessed for periods of time in which Bed Bath & Beyond's ability to pick up the containers at the ports or return empty containers promptly were constrained due to circumstances outside the control of Bed Bath & Beyond, such as congestion at ports, but they're also saying, or policies implemented by OOCL and other carriers that interfered with the ordinary handling of ocean freight, bad weather delays, labor disputes, and quarantine social distancing orders in terminals, depots, yards, and for vessel crew. This is something we're seeing the FMC really tag on to, is who is supposed to be covering these costs and what happens if you don't have the ability to pick up or return empty containers. That's another piece that I think is going to be a really interesting legal determination or legal decision in this fact pattern if it goes all the way. I hope it goes all the way so that we get some clarity here. So we have minimum quantity commitments and kind of service contract terms as the first allegation. This ability or inability to pick up or drop off as number two. So then the third allegation is OOCL sought to coerce premium pricing by inducing Bed Bath & Beyond to enter into premium rate contracts as a precondition to carry just a fraction of the quantity commitments to which Bed Bath & Beyond had already committed its service contracts with OOCL. They're saying that 600, that 1,300 that we just talked about, those lapses in full quantity commitments that they had otherwise annually agreed to, they're saying that OOCL was coercing them into higher premium pricing, saying, look, we'll get your stuff moved. We understand this is important, but you're going to have to pay more. We only got 3 months left in the year. If you really want your stuff, you're going to have to pay more. That's just what the market is. Bed Bath & Beyond is saying, that didn't sit well with us. That made us incur additional fees, additional costs that we were not anticipating here. Interesting case, right? So ultimately, the amount in damages that Bed Bath & Beyond is seeking is $31.6 million. And they're saying, look, that's in addition to other injuries, which also include lost profits that they're not including in that $31.6 million number. I think this case has the potential for some really interesting case law, some clarity in a case law perspective. So we've been looking for clarity in rulemakings and certainly in kind of tea leaves at the FMC and their different announcements. But ultimately, a judicial decision coming out from the FMC, right now it's with the administrative law judge. We've talked about that before. That's the independent arm of the FMC. Once she makes her initial decision, then they have time for an appeal. We have a long ways to go here. We're probably not going to get clarity for another year. But once that initial decision comes out, then the FMC likely will pull the case. They'll sua sponte review it. They'll pull the case. And the full FMC, all five commissioners, will look at it then. And then we'll get some clarity. Like I said, it's a year away, unfortunately. Probably. It could go faster, but at least a year away, most likely. But look, that would set things up, at least with this fact pattern. I'm really interested. I'm going to be watching this. I'm probably going to be legally nerding out on this case, so I'm going to be watching this. I'm interested to see what you guys have to say. What do you think about this case? Have you been following it? Have you kind of been paying attention to it? What do you hope to see come out of this? I think this is going to be a really interesting one to follow. Well, that's it for today. As always, the guidance here is general and for educational purposes only. It should not be construed to be legal advice directly related to your matter. If you need an attorney, contact an attorney. But if you have specific legal questions, feel free to reach out to me at my legal company, Squall Strategies. Otherwise, for the non-legal questions, the e-learning, and general industry information and insights, come find me at The Maritime Professor. If you like these videos, let me know. Comment, like, and share. If you want to listen to these episodes on demand, or if you missed any previous episodes, check out the podcast By Land and By Sea. If you prefer to see the video, they live on my YouTube page, By Land and By Sea, presented by The Maritime Professor. And while you're at it, check out the website, themaritimeprofessor.com. E-courses are dropping soon. I'm back at it. I'm working on it. So until next week, this is Lauren Began, The Maritime Professor, and you just listen to By Land and By Sea. See you next time.